Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Connie reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, August 6, 2020. County News. DA sues county judge after disagreement over budget. By Caitlin Randall. A disagreement over the county budget escalated Wednesday when Midland County District Attorney Laura Nodoff filed a civil suit against County Judge Terry Johnson. Nodoff alleges in the suit that Johnson failed to fulfill his duties to prepare and file the county budget. She is requesting that the budget be filed immediately with the county clerk and that Johnson be ordered to file the budget by July 31st in future years. The county judge is required to prepare a budget annually in July, the 10th month of the fiscal year. Nodoff states in the suit, that budget is then filed with the county clerk where it can be inspected by any party and is posted on Midland County's website. Johnson told the Reporter Telegram he will be filing the budget today. Nodoff states in the lawsuit she is concerned that Johnson may attempt to make budgetary adjustments that are contrary to the laws of the state of Texas, as her reason for wanting to inspect the budget and filing the suit. In a phone interview, Commissioner Scott Ramsey said there was less transparency with the writing of the county budget than in previous years, when commissioners and department heads could view the proposal through a document sharing program as it was being written. This year, commissioners and department heads were not able to see the budget, Ramsey said. I don't know what he's doing, he said. It's a mystery to me. Johnson said he chose to not make the budget available before it was filed because he didn't want the commissioners or department heads to comment on the budget as he was writing it. He said the budget will be discussed and revised in future commissioners' court sessions. The first budget-related item will be discussed Monday when the commissioners' court proposes the county's proper tax rate, and votes on salaries for elected officials. Ramsey said he felt the commissioners should have been given more time to review the budget before deciding on the tax rate. Johnson, however, said they're claiming it doesn't give them time to come up with a tax rate. It gives them all the time they had last year. Records show last year's budget was filed on August 8th, and the commissioners discussed the proposed tax rate on August 12th, following the same timeline as this year. Although the commissioners last year were able to view the budget before it was filed. In a statement to the Reporter Telegram, Nodoff declined to comment on the lawsuit, citing the ongoing litigation. As a district attorney, I have certain statutory duties and ethical obligations per the Texas Disciplinary Rules of Professional Conduct, she said. I take those obligations very seriously. As such, I will not comment on the pending litigation so as to maintain the integrity of the judicial process. County Attorney Russell Malm said Johnson is not out of compliance with the local government code by not submitting the budget in July. Although the law requires the county judge to prepare the budget in July, it doesn't say when he has to finish it or when he has to file it, Malm said. Further, he said, previous county judges have usually filed the budget in early August. Malm said, it logically doesn't make sense for the budget to be finished in July because the county judge meets with each department head to review the budget before filing it. Under the current process, the county judge meets individually with everyone who has a budget, he said. That lengthens the process. Nodoff requested an expedited hearing on the suit, but no time was set for the hearing as of Wednesday evening. The hearing was delayed after the judge first assigned to the case recused himself. It has now been assigned to Ector County 385th District Court Judge Stacy Trotter. Philanthropy. WTFB begins Farmers to Families program. Congressman Conway helps distribute boxes. By J.C. Lewis. U.S. Republican Mike Conway, Midland, visited the West Texas Food Bank on Wednesday to meet with WTFB Executive Director Libby Campbell and help distribute boxes of food from the Farmers to Families program. The WTFB received its first shipment from the United States Department of Agriculture's new program that helps distribute fresh produce. The Farmers to Families program started last month and will distribute fresh fruit and vegetables to West Texans. The distribution will address the issues associated with hunger, with people losing jobs or having reduced hours. All of the things that are happening here in West Texas ripples into people not being able to feed their families, he said. It doesn't fix everything, but it does fix a certain amount of the issues associated with hunger in West Texas. The food bank distributed 1.2 million pounds of food last month, and 40% of the people receiving boxes haven't applied for food assistance in the past, Campbell said. On Wednesday, volunteers distributed food to 251 families. That speaks to how deep this problem is in our society, Conway said. You've got people who have never needed the public assistance system and are now needing it through this program. The food bank is only accepting monetary donations due to staffing limitations, Campbell said. There is more work involved when accepting physical food donations, including sorting and sanitizing that the team doesn't have time for currently. The National Guard has left and there are 48 staff members working to fulfill the food needs of people in 19 counties. Conway said the program started with the work done in Washington, D.C., when the bill was passed in March. The USDA then made the program a reality. However, he said, the real heroes are the people who work at the food bank. The real heroes are the folks who work at the food bank, he said. Libby Campbell and her team are the real heroes. He added that it's troubling that so many people are suffering from food insecurities, but it does feel good that the community has been responding positively to the ongoing problem with help. Nobody expected this, obviously. It is a real credit to the citizens of Odessa and Midland to have provided this facility and the brand new facility in Midland, he said. Good-hearted people have made it happen. To have this facility and assist in place to be able to respond to this is a real credit to the communities and the vision that was associated with making all this happen. This is Conway's first visit to the food bank since the coronavirus pandemic began, but he has attended other distribution days previously. He hopes the Farmers to Families program will continue into October. There is a response with assets and tools in place in our communities, he said. There are a lot of folks who are still hurting. This is not the full response to people being hungry, but it is a good response in that regard. The bigger issue is to take care of each other. The new normal. The caption reads, Pamela Kimahu, 4th and 5th grade art of thinking instructor at Sam Houston Collegiate Prep, works with students Wednesday during the first day of class. From the front page, travel. Ruidosa, trying to avoid falling off the cliff. By Stephen Hamway, Albuquerque Journal, New Mexico. Ruidosa. For one glorious weekend in early March, during spring break for many Texas schools, everything was humming for Joe Madrid and his Ruidosa jewelry business, Apache Trading Company. Those 3 days of that weekend, man, we knocked them dead, Madrid said. We were so busy. Then COVID-19 reached New Mexico and everything slammed to a halt. Apache Trading Company closed its doors for 2 months. Even when the store reopened and visitors began pouring back in from Texas and Arizona, sales didn't recover to pre-pandemic levels. Madrid estimated the store is down $40,000 in sales so far this year, a consequence of the lengthy closure as well as nervousness about spending money in an uncertain economic climate. The town fills up on weekends and people come in, but they're not buying, Madrid said. It's been a roller coaster year for the southeast New Mexico mountain town. After popular casinos closed and the famous Ruidosa Downs racetrack stopped selling tickets for races, the village suffered through a difficult spring season. As the weather warmed and the state government relaxed restrictions on businesses in May, Ruidosa Mayor Lynn Crawford said visitors returned in force to the village, as they do every year, even with casinos and other amenities still closed or limited. We want that kind of activity, but we were getting run over, Crawford said. There was no social distancing. It was unsafe. With COVID-19 cases rising in Southwest, and with Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham's most recently unveiled restrictions aimed at limiting visitation from outside the state, shop owners reported that the number of visitors is down again this month. On a Sunday afternoon, on a recent Monday, just a handful of visitors lingered in the abundant outdoor patios along Sutterth Drive, the village's main street. While there were plenty of cars on the streets, only a few had license plates from Texas, a state that, in better times, is home to more than half of the village's visitors. Ruidoso faces an uncertain future during what normally would be the heart of its summer tourism season. We're just trying to figure out how long we've got to hold our breath for, Crawford said. Rural area hit hard. Few New Mexico industries has been hit harder by the pandemic than tourism, as it prompted businesses to close and tourists to cancel their trips. The state's leisure and hospitality sector, which includes most tourism and tourism-related employers, shed nearly 38% of its jobs over a 12-month period ending in May, according to data from the New Mexico Department of Workforce Solutions. During the depths of the pandemic, the occupancy rate at New Mexico hotels dropped to as low as 22%, according to a presentation from the New Mexico Tourism Department. As rough as the pandemic has been on the entire state, there's evidence that it has been hardest on New Mexico's rural communities, many of which rely heavily on tourism spending. Cody Johnson, spokesman for the State Tourism Department, said the agency identified 8 New Mexico counties, including Ruidoso's Lincoln County, where direct tourism spending supported at least 20% of the county's workforce. These counties were deemed at risk during the pandemic unless they're able to diversify their local economies. In Taos Country, home to Taos Pueblo, Red River, and other famous tourist destinations, 30% of the workforce is receiving unemployment benefits, according to a recent presentation from the Legislative Finance Committee. Sandoval County, which contains part of Bandelier National Monument, Valley's Caldera National Preserve, and other destinations, also has more than a quarter of its workforce seeking benefits, according to the presentation. Not many New Mexico commodities really rely more heavily on tourists and second home owners than Ruidoso, a village of around 8,000 residents that routinely see 30,000 visitors on busy summer weekends. When the weather warms up, visitors from all over the Southwest flock to the community, nestled in the Sierra Blanca Mountains, more than 6,900 feet above sea level, for golf, gambling, and relief from the heat. As a result, Ruidoso and Lincoln County have been hit particularly hard by the downturn in tourism. During a 12-month period ending in May, only Taos County saw a larger jump in its unemployment rate than Lincoln County, according to the recent report from the State Workforce Department. Even established businesses are worried about the future. Noisy Water winery owner and winemaker Jasper Riddle, who operates a tasting room in Ruidoso and a production facility in nearby Alto, said he's worried about the region giving up its hard-won gains over the past several years. "I get that the whole world is going to slide back a little right now," Riddle said. "I just hope that we don't go off the cliff. Visit, but not now." To date, Lincoln County largely has been spared from direct health impacts of the coronavirus. As of Thursday, the county has recorded just 29 cases and 0 deaths, giving it one of the lowest per capita rates in the state and county. Crawford said Ruidoso was proactive about creating a roadmap for businesses to operate safely. The village created Ruidoso Safe, a series of guidelines for businesses to reopen and operate safely, and it ratified a 72-page county plan with specific guidelines for various types of businesses, school districts, and other entities. Crawford said the village had taken more direct steps to assist its residents as well, including delivery groceries, offering residents rides, and setting up daycare for frontline workers. Justin Hoffman, director of tourism for the village, added that Ruidoso opted to suspend its normal advertising campaign for tourists early in the pandemic, in what would normally be led up to the hectic summer season. Instead, Hoffman said the village rolled out a unique marketing campaign titled Discover Ruidoso Later. We wanted to stay top of mind, but we also wanted to be informative and to let people know that this just wasn't the right time to visit, Hoffman said. In spite of the messaging, Hoffman said more visitors felt emboldened to travel to Ruidoso in June after the state relaxed restrictions on businesses. With fewer indoor destinations to choose from, Hoffman said visitors flooded into nearby lakes and village parks. Timothy Dodge, village manager for Ruidoso, said the crowds got so big that the community had to limit access at the popular Grindstone Lake to visitors with reservations. We had a tremendous amount of people showing up, Dodge said. What's ahead? Still, some businesses in the community are bracing for a challenging rest of the summer. At the beginning of July, Lujan Grisham announced that all visitors traveling to New Mexico from other states must self-isolate for 14 days in response to a spike in cases across the region. At a later news conference, the governor asked out-of-state tourists, particularly those from Texas, to visit another time. We don't want you to take the virus to El Paso. We don't want you to bring the virus from El Paso, Lujan Grisham said. Hoffman said roughly 55% of Ruidoso's tourists come from Texas, making it by far the largest inbound market for the village. Many tourists have opted not to come, and businesses are feeling the effects. Michelle O'Brien, owner of Michelle's Ruidoso, a clothing store in Ruidoso's Midtown District, said business at her store has dried up considerably after a promising late June. I would almost compare this to October or early November, O'Brien said. The loss of visitation could have long-term ripple effects for local businesses. O'Brien said many Ruidoso businesses rely heavily on summertime tourism to offset losses during less busy times of Ruidoso. In Ruidoso, literally, we do 60 to 70% of our business in this four-month period, she said. Hoffman said in recent years, the village has worked to encourage tourists to come during spring and fall by adding events including concerts and motorcycle rallies to the calendar. However, most of those events have been canceled this year because of the coronavirus, denying businesses an opportunity to recoup some of their losses. Little ripples in a small community have a big impact, Huffman said. Without a state travel limited and international travel almost impossible, Rio Doce is trying to find more visitors in its own backyard. In a typical year, Huffman said, tourists from other parts of New Mexico constitute just the third largest share of visitors for the village, behind Texas and Mexico. While Huffman said the community has made gains in recent years, he acknowledged it can be challenging to lure visitors down from Albuquerque and Santa Fe. People don't think to drive south to go to the mountains, typically, Huffman said. Some businesses are just trying to survive until the end of a challenging year, but others are trying to adapt with the times. Riddle said noisy water has expanded distribution in Texas and Arizona earlier than the company anticipated, after seeing retail sales plummet 80% in May. At its tasting rooms, servers limit contact with guests and provide cleanable or disposable menus to limit transmission in the event of an outbreak. Riddle said one small advantage of opening in a mountain town is that many businesses have more room to spread out and socially distance than those in larger cities. He said it's just a matter of keeping businesses afloat long enough for them to implement the necessary changes. I do think now we're at the point where the economic implications and other implications are staring us right in the face, Riddle said. Distributed by Tribune Content Agency. MPD deploys gas to get robbery suspects. From staff reports, two Midland residents were taken in custody Wednesday after being involved in an aggravated robbery, according to the Midland Police Department. The police department reported Wednesday that at approximately 8 a.m., officers and detectives responded to the 1600 block of East Pecan Avenue in reference to an aggravated robbery. A suspect, 39-year-old Hiawatha Crawford, contacted the homeowner who works on cars from his residence, according to MPD. During the contact, 19-year-old Escavon Crawford and three unnamed juveniles exited their vehicle and began to assault the homeowner. As a result of the assault, the homeowner sustained minor injuries that did not require treatment. The police department also reported that during the assault, one of the suspects displayed a handgun while another suspect took a set of keys to a vehicle that was at the residence waiting to be serviced. The suspects then stole the car and fled the residence, according to police. The suspect's vehicle and the stolen vehicle were later located in the parking lot of Compass Point Apartments, where Hiawatha and Escavon Crawford are known to reside, according to police. Because of the display of a firearm, the Midland Police Department SWAT team was called to the scene. Suspects refused to exit the apartment and CAS was deployed, MPD reported. Once the suspects exited the apartment, Hiawatha and Escavon Crawford were taken into custody without further incident. Both Hiawatha and Escavon Crawford were arrested on charges of aggravated robbery. The investigation is ongoing, There are no further details at this time. City. Cases in Midland County approach 2,500. 45th death reported. From staff reports. The Midland Health Department reported the 45th Midland County resident has died due to complications with coronavirus. A man in his 70s passed away Tuesday after being treated at Midland Memorial Hospital, according to the City of Midland. The Health Department also reported 69 new coronavirus cases Wednesday, bringing the total to 314 this week and 2,492 during the pandemic. The number of recoveries also topped 1,300 on Wednesday, according to the Health Department, reaching 1,301. There also are 768 people self-isolating, 229 under investigation, and 141 listed as unable to locate, refused. The Texas Department of State Health Services is requiring local health departments to switch to a new software for reporting case members. Once the Midland Health Department completes the transition, more numbers will be available. Coronavirus report. Cases Monday, 184. Cases Tuesday, 81. Cases Wednesday, 69. Total cases, 2,492. Odessa Hospital praise ECISD initiatives by J.C. Lewis. Medical Center Health System CEO and President Russell Tippin said Wednesday that ECISD Scott Murray has done a good job of listening to teachers, families, and students about returning to in-person school. Can you imagine all the data they are having to pour through for good options for 30,000 plus students? He said, I think we need to give Dr. Murray and the school district our very big attaboy for listening to all the moms and all the opinions out there. MCH Chief Nursing Officer Kristen Timmons said the district has an evolving plan. He is taking feedback and recommendations every single day and making adjustments for the school district, she said. As mom and healthcare provider, I cannot give enough praise to what the school district has made an effort to do for our students. Dr. Tim Bitten said the district is aggressively working a plan to protect the students and teachers going into the school year. He also received a report from the county about nursing homes. He said the health department is currently working with Siena Nursing and Rehabilitation with their infection control to help with the nursing home's response. The nursing home has reported 75 total coronavirus cases, with 10 active cases and 14 resident deaths. MCH also reported its 38th coronavirus-related death early Wednesday, according to a press release. The patient, a 61-year-old man, was admitted from the emergency room overnight and died a few hours later. The patient had pre-existing conditions and the family has been notified. Tippin said the man was not from Ector County and was passing through the area. He sought treatment at the MCH emergency room and passed shortly after. Tippin also said the hospital has begun will begin elective surgeries again on Thursday. His announcement Wednesday comes after the hospital consolidated coronavirus treatment areas and the Wheatley Stewart Medical Pavilion coronavirus unit was moved. Coronavirus stats. Ector County, 52 deaths, 2,550 recovered, 879 active cases, 3,481 confirmed and probable cases. Odessa Regional Medical Center, 348 positive tests, 13 patients in-house, 9 patients in ICU with 7 on ventilators, 1 from Big Spring and 1 from Andrews. 1 death since Monday. Source ORMC. Medical Center Hospital, 1,143 positive, 25 COVID patients in-house, 9 in CCU with 7 on ventilators. Patient list includes 2 from Sienna Nursing and Rehabilitation, 1 from Focused Care Odessa, 1 from Deering Nursing Home, 1 from Andrews, 1 from Monahans, 1 from Stanton, 1 from Fort Stockton, and 2 from Pecos. Source MCH. Ector County Nursing Home, Focused Care in Odessa, 22 total cases, 2 active cases, and 4 deaths. Deering Nursing Home, 4 total cases and 2 active cases. The Courtyards Associated Living, 5 total cases and 1 active case. Buena Vida Nursing and Rehabilitation, 4 total cases and 1 active. Sienna Nursing and Rehabilitation, 75 total cases, 10 active cases, and 14 deaths. Source ECHD.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, August 6, 2020. First day of school. Sam Houston Collegiate Preparatory Elementary began the 2020-2021 school year this morning, with some students on campus and others learning at home. Pictured left to right are Ava, second grade, Ariana, kindergarten, and Anthony, fourth grade. Hottest months in Midland history. Month, July 2016. Average temperature, 88.2 degrees. June 2011, 88 degrees. August 2019, 87.9 degrees. August 2011, 87.8 degrees. July 2020, 87.4 degrees. Source, National Weather Service, Midland. Hottest months of July. Month, 2016, average temperature, 88.2 degrees. 2020, 87.4 degrees. 2011, 87 degrees. 1964, 86.9 degrees. 1998, 86.9 degrees. Note, the average temperature for July is 82.2 degrees. Source, National Weather Service. Doug Russell Pool is open today. The city's pools, Doug Russell and Washington Family Aquatic Center, are open on alternating days during coronavirus pandemic. Doug Russell is open today for 2 3-hour sessions, noon to 3 p.m. and 4 to 7 p.m. Passes are $3 and go on sale at the pool 30 minutes before opening. Passes are good only for the day of purchase. Watering schedule. The City of Midland has adjusted the watering schedule from 2 days a week to 4 days a week. Even-numbered addresses can water on Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Odd-numbered addresses can water on Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. The Utilities Department says residents should not overwater the lawn and should watch for puddles or runoff from sprinklers. Tax-free weekend starts Friday. School will be starting next month, and that means it's time for back-to-school shopping. The sales tax holiday in Texas is Friday through Sunday. Items that qualify as tax-free include most clothing and footwear, school supplies, and backpacks. Purchases may be made in-store or online, according to the State Comptroller's Office website. For more information and for a complete list of items that may be purchased tax-free, go to comptroller.texas.gov. Today in Texas history. In 2013, U.S. Army Major Nidal Malik Hassan went on trial at Fort Hood, charged with killing 13 people and wounding 32 others in a 2009 attack. Hassan, who admitted carrying out the attack, was convicted and sentenced to death. Today in history. Today is Thursday, August 6, the 219th day of 2020. There are 147 days left in the year. Today's highlight. On August 6, 1945, during World War II, the U.S. B-29 superfortress Enola Gay dropped an atomic bomb codenamed Little Boy on Hiroshima, Japan, resulting in an estimated 140,000 deaths. 3 days later, the United States exploded a nuclear device over Nagasaki. 5 days after that, Imperial Japan surrendered. On this date, in 1930, New York State Supreme Court Justice Joseph Force Crater went missing after leaving a Manhattan restaurant. His disappearance remains a mystery. In 1991, the World Wide Web made its public debut as a means of accessing web pages over the Internet. In 2009, Sonia Sotomayor was confirmed as the first Hispanic Supreme Court Justice by a Senate vote of 68-31. Today's birthdays. Country musician Mark Dufresne is 67. Country singers Patsy and Peggy Lynn are 56. Basketball Hall of Famer David Robinson is 55. Country singer Lisa Stewart is 52. Movie writer-director M. Night Shyamalan is 50.
Opinion Extra by Stuart Doran. Let's figure out how to help students working away from school. What are working parents supposed to do with their children during the first 4 weeks of Midland ISD's school year? This is a question people must think about after the district decided the start of school will be at-home instruction. Before diving in too deep with the question, let me say that I believe the district didn't have a choice about starting the school year with students off campus. The health concerns were too great, and more than 60% of 2,082 MISD staff responding to a survey were extremely or moderately concerned about the impact of COVID-19. Had MISD announced mandatory attendance from its teachers in front of a school population, there would have been loud cries about the danger teachers would be facing. But having written that, let me add there are teachers who wanted to be in the classroom. There are teachers who were willing to sign a waiver to be in front of their students in a classroom. So MISD staff isn't to blame, and neither is an administration that doesn't have a playbook to refer to. But while we got information that MISD will hold school virtually for at least the first 4 weeks, and possibly at least 8 weeks when it is said and done, our community needs more information about what to do to help working parents and those without the benefit of technology to participate in Google Classroom or another program. We need someone or some entity to help families that need help because we are less than 2 weeks from August 19th, the first day of school. I hope school district leaders and others in the community will have answers to the following questions. What opportunities, either sponsored by the district or a nonprofit, are there for families that want to drop off their kids at a place where those students can be focused on learning? What ability does the district have to create more options for those families? Surely there is money in the budget and inside reserves to create larger centers for healthy, socially distanced students to wire into the education that needs to take place and the routines that need to be formed. We surely can find volunteers and paid temporary help in the logistics. Is there the opportunity to open a couple of campuses with willing students and staff to show what would happen with a blended or on-campus instruction? Midland could learn from that soft start or on-campus instruction. And we could see firsthand the positive and negatives. If COVID-19 became a problem, obviously we have a backup in place. We certainly have had time to prepare for a scenario in which the district and or community can step in and ease the burden of frustrated Midlanders. And just like the district came forward in the spring to meet the nutritional needs of its students, we expect our district and community can again rise to the occasion. Again, anyone who wants to take these 2 weeks as an opportunity to throw stones at the school district hasn't been paying attention to what has happened in our community and probably isn't interested in coming up with solutions. The district didn't have a choice when it came to the well-being of 26,000 students and 3,000 plus employees. But that doesn't mean MISD, like the rest of us, can't be part of the solution of putting students in a position to be successful during re-entry. There are thousands of families that could use the help. Obituaries. John Adam Ellsworth Boswell. John Adam Ellsworth Boswell of Midland, Texas, age 49, passed away on Saturday, August 1st, 2020. John was born August 25th, 1970, in Houston, and grew up along with his siblings before moving to Midland in 1972. He later moved to Austin for a short time before circling back to Midland in 2002. Soon after, he met the love of his life, Leslie Brewer. They were married on March 13th, 2004. In 2016, he bought out Daryl McDonald and started his own real estate brokerage, now known as Boswell & Associates. John was very passionate about real estate, specifically owners and tenant rights. He is preceded in death by his brother, George Stanley Boswell, and his parents, Ellsworth R. G. Boswell and Mary Ray. His father-in-law, Walter Scott Brewer III. He is survived by his wife of 16 years, Leslie Brewer Boswell, son Aiden Radford Scott, daughter Nora Raylan, sisters Annette Marie Hall and Rosalind Suzanne, brothers Thomas Patrick and Paul Michael, mother-in-law Lynn Brewer, sister-in-law Stephanie Jones, brother-in-law Walter Scott Brewer V, many nephews and nieces. He was also known as Supa Uncle John. A rosary will be held at St. Anne's Catholic Church in Midland on Thursday, August 6th at 7 p.m., followed by a celebration of life at Mid-Cities Community Church, 8700 State Highway 191, on Friday, August 7th at 1 p.m. Masks are required at both services. The Brewer-Boswell family wishes to convey their gratitude for the outpouring of love, prayers, and support during this time. In lieu of flowers and in John's memory, donations made to SHARE and Bynum School or the charity of your choice are very much appreciated. Arrangements are under the direction of Nailey Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made to www.mpwelch.com. Rigoberto Jr. Ontiveros Garcia. Rigoberto Jr. Ontiveros Garcia, 31, of Midland, Texas, passed away unexpectedly in his home on August 2, 2020. He is survived by his son, Asen Lucas Garcia, and his devoted parents, Rigoberto Sr. and Elsa Garcia. His paternal grandfather, Isabel Garcia, his maternal grandparents, Adam and Elvira Ontiveros, his big sister, Valerie Taran, and her spouse, Aaron Taran, nephews, Jonah, Adrian, Abram, and his princess, Ava, his younger brother, Raphael Ralph Garcia, his wife, Kelsey Magana, and nephew, Cayenne Garcia, his baby brother, Randy Garcia, and his wife, Evelyn Duras. He also had numerous aunts, uncles, and cousins. He is preceded in death by his paternal grandmother, Obadiah Garcia. Visitation will be held at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home Chapel at 1502 North La Mesa Road, Midland, Texas, Thursday, August 6, 2020, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., closing every 3 hours for an hour for cleaning, with services at 7 p.m. Funeral services will be held on Friday, August 7th, 2020 at 2 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home Chapel with burial following at Serenity Memorial Garden Cemetery. Funeral arrangements are entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Willie George White Jr. Willie George White Jr., 74, of Midland, Texas, passed away on Monday, August 3, 2020, in Midland, Texas. Willie was born March 7, 1946, in Atlanta, Texas. He went to high school in McCamey, Texas, and graduated school in Post, Texas. Willie married Mary Jo Johnson White in 1984 in Howard County. Willie is preceded in death by his father, Willie George White, Sr., brothers Jerry Lee White and Donald Wayne White. Willie is survived by his wife, Mary Jo White, mother, R.T. White, sisters, Clara Carter, Diane Woods, husband, Harold, Becky White, brothers Tommy White, wife, Garcia, Gracie, Larry White, wife, Kay, children, Eddie Lee White, Tisha, Quincy T. White, Savannah, Johnny Melvin Mornay, Cassandra Denise Walters, Samuel Adam Mornay, Daryl Jean Mornay, Naomi, Raymond Earl Mornay, Candace Yvette Mornay, Sheldon Michael. A host of nieces, nephews, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. Arrangements by Jackie Warren Funeral Home. Funeral will be at Greater Ideal Baptist Church, 3001 Tyler, Midland, Texas, 79701, Saturday, August 8th, 2020 at 2 p.m. Death Notices. Juan Vasquez. Juan Vasquez, 41, of Midland, passed away August 3, 2020. The family will receive guests from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Friday, August 7, 2020, at Natalie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home in Midland. A celebration of life will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, August 8, 2020, at First Baptist Church Chapel in Midland, with a burial following at Serenity Memorial Gardens Cemetery. Arrangements are under the direction of Natalie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.mpwelch.com. Natalie Perez. Funeral services for Natalie Perez of La Mesa, Texas are pending at Jackie Warren Funeral Home. Natalie Perez died August 3, 2020 in La Mesa, Texas. Ollie Pearl Sims. Ollie Pearl Sims, 71, of Midland, passed away July 31, 2020. She was born March 22, 1949, in Midland, Texas, to Grover and Elizabeth Sims. She is survived by her children, Brent, Latricia, and Melanie Burnett, mother Elizabeth Sims, and six brothers. There are no services scheduled at this time.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.